seated. Ladies and gentlemen, the Superintendent of the United States Naval Academy, Vice Admiral William P. Lawrence, United States Navy.
On behalf of the Brigade of Midshipmen and the staff and faculty of the United States Naval Academy, I extend a warm welcome to Vice President Mrs. Bush, our distinguished guests, proud parents, families, and friends. We're assembled this morning to honor a superb group of midshipmen, young men and women who have excelled in leadership, scholarship, and in every area of their endeavor at the Naval Academy. It's with a great sense of pride and pleasure that we present for graduation and commissioning the United States Naval Academy class of 1981. This is a very proud moment for me personally because I have been closely associated with the class of 81 since that hot, humid afternoon of 6 July 1977 when you took the oath of office as midshipman to begin the long and arduous course leading to this proud day. I've watched with great admiration as you've diligently applied yourself and have grown and developed into competent, poised, and mature young leaders. By your successful completion of the rigorous course here, you have made the commitment to excellence, which is the hallmark of this institution. Now you must make that commitment a part of a larger, more noble commitment, a commitment to service to country. Never forget that you're joining a long and proud tradition of graduates who have always placed their service to country above all else. We send you to the fleet with great pride and expectation, and I look forward to serving with you in the fleet. It's highly fitting that our speaker today is a man who epitomizes commitment to excellence and service. During World War II, he became the youngest commissioned naval aviator and was decorated for bravery as a carrier pilot in the Pacific. After a successful career in business, he has served as a member of the U.S. Congress, ambassador to the United Nations, Chief of the U.S. Liaison Office to the People's Republic of China, and Director of the Central Intelligence Agency. No one could better inspire those who are embarking on a career of service. It's a great honor and pleasure to welcome to the United States Naval Academy our Vice President, the Honorable George Bush.
Thank you, Thank you, Admiral Lawrence.
Thank you all very much. Gentlemen, ladies, Marjorie. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Admiral Lawrence. And to our Secretary Lehman, to the members of Congress here, to our Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Hayward, and to the Commandant of the Corps, General Robert Barrow, and to many other distinguished visitors, let me just say how privileged I am to be here today. I might start off with a very personal reference. My own staff of the Vice President is headed by Admiral Murphy, former commander of the 6th Fleet, and that shows you that the Navy is infiltrated into the very office of the Vice President. But that's the way it is, and that's the way I like it, and maybe that's the way it'll stay. Before making my brief remarks, I think it's appropriate to note the tragedy aboard the Nimitz this morning. We all learned of it with great sadness, an accident that claimed the lives of several brave and dedicated Navy and Marine Corps personnel, and the President and I extend our deepest sympathy to their families. I saluted all those here on the podium and others, and have omitted, of course, but I shouldn't have, the distinguished faculty of the United States Naval Academy. But today, it's the class of 81 that we're here to honor, to congratulate, and to wish Godspeed. As I stand here on the grounds, I never stood in the 50-yard line before, but as I stand here in the Naval Academy, I'm reminded, and the Admiral touched on it, of how much my own 3 years in the Navy meant to me personally. And when I hear this lovely music, my mind goes racing back some 38, I hate to tell you, years ago to my own experiences in the Navy. A few years ago, I was asked by the superintendent here to stand at his side as the brigade of midshipmen passed in review on another field in this beautiful complex. And standing out there, 50 years old, I found myself kind of choking up, and I began to feel a lump in my throat, and I thought of history, of orders given, you know, atolls far away, friends lost, friendships made, and respect for the Navy. I did not, I must confess, graduate from the Naval Academy, but I am, like anybody else who's served in the Navy, a naval person and damn proud of it. And I know I speak for the President when I say that he'd like to be here today, but you see, he had to be in West Point after what you guys did to him last fall. They have a serious morale problem up there. And so But today, let me talk to you in the spirit of Homer, all you Latin scholars out there, and there's got to be three or four in this graduating class. Remember that Homer said, if you have something important to say, say it short. But nevertheless, I want to talk to you as graduates of the Academy and what you can expect as you face a future as leaders. And the superintendent appropriately pointed to this, leaders of our country. If there's a single word to sum up what the meaning of your 4 years here at Annapolis have been directed toward, that word has got to be leadership. With that in mind, it's significant to note that you and your fellow graduates from the other service academies will be witness in your first few years of duty to the departure from the military scene of the remaining veterans of World War II. Indeed, most of those World War II veterans have already left active service, and the frame of reference at the highest levels of leadership within our armed forces is more and more that of the American involvement in Korea and in Vietnam. The significance of this changing of the guard lies in the fact that World War II was the last war in which we as a nation were disposed to fight with all the material and moral force that we could bring to bear. The experience of that war, shared by many of us, helps to better understand what it is We're trying to deter, and indeed what the word deterrence itself means. Since that time, of course, the world of the American military professional has become more complex. Korea and Vietnam were in large part limited in their scope and intensity by the new realities of modern weaponry. Add to this the fact that the fossil energy that we once drew on without limit is now recognized as a finite resource. And you can see that our military options have become increasingly difficult and dangerous in the past four decades. There are other complications as well, factors that have a significant impact on our national defense decisions and on our priorities. When I was flying in World War II, if we missed a wire or crashed into a barrier, the superiors somehow just seemed to be able to order up another plane. I might also add that this wasn't approved practice, but it did occasionally happen. But there were different times. Today, the Secretary knows, many here know, the Chief, airplanes cost $25 million. Small wonder that we put more into pilot training nowadays than ever before. And small wonder that we now talk in terms of tens of airplanes, while during World War II, we were producing thousands. And the same could be said for the expertise that's needed in the submarines and the surface navy. But if the scope and numbers of modern weaponry and defense have changed in the past 40 years, I regret to say that the old problems that have made the use of weapons necessary throughout history aren't different than they used to be. There are still nations that rely on aggression as a means of expanding their influence. And there are still injustices forced by one nation on another, despite all the rules of international law. In meeting the threat of such aggression, the United States Navy remains today, as throughout our country's history, an irreplaceable force in demonstrating America's determination to defend its vital interests. And that fact of the importance of the Navy, is well understood by the President, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, everybody across the high levels of this administration. Let me assure you that our administration is determined to reverse the trend that set in. Reverse the trend that set in vis-a-vis the power of the Soviet Union in terms of the Navy, so that the United States Navy takes its place, or keeps its place, if you will, as second to none in the face of the earth. Our Navy has the high quality of leadership necessary to carry out its mission in the 80s. From the Chief of Naval Operations, Tom Hayward, to the men and women in this audience who are now entering active duty, and through the many, many enlisted personnel in the Navy. And though, as I say, there has been tremendous change in terms of difficulties and dangers involved in that mission, the stakes are the same, nothing less than the security of our nation. And that's why in this decade of the 80s, our nation's service academies and armed forces deserve the support of every American who prizes freedom. Too often in the past, the vital role played by the men and women who make up our armed forces has gone unappreciated in peacetime. But if we value freedom, and if we value peace, we must also value those who wear the uniform of our country. One thing that I could never stomach in the last couple of decades were the vicious attacks on the military of the United States during the late 60s and the 70s. And thank God we seem to have put behind us those too frequent attacks on those who are willing to serve their country. Let me assure you that America's service academies and our armed forces have no more ardent supporter than the President, who now sits in the White House, your Commander-in-Chief. You're graduating at a critical time in terms of the direction of the United States Navy. Our president has made a determination, long overdue in my opinion, well enforced by our new Secretary of the Navy, John Layman, with us here today, to strengthen the U.S. Navy, to reverse that trend, as I mentioned earlier. We intend to move forward towards the concept of a viable three-ocean Navy, to continue to improve our submarine capability, to keep naval aviation, and surely that includes the Marine Corps in the air and on the ground, in the forefront, and to see that our surface Navy, once without peer, is fast, strong, and flexible enough to protect our interests around the globe. Your country and freedom-loving men and women everywhere need you to maintain, operate, and lead America's naval arm in these difficult and dangerous times. To the class of 81, let me add that while the burden you take up is great, you can be sure not only of the support, but the active help of your countrymen in carrying out your mission. The security of our country and the guarding of its freedom will, to a major extent, rest on your shoulders. But there will be others from every walk of American life sharing the responsibility of leadership in the years ahead. And I say this because I believe, indeed I know, that there is a renewed faith and enthusiasm in our country today. As you travel across the country, you feel it, a new optimism about our country's future and about our ability to meet the challenges of that future, much as previous generations of Americans have met the challenges of their times. Call it, if you will, the rediscovery of America by the American people. The recognition once again, not only of what we have been and what we are, but of what we have within our ability to become. And yes, we face great challenges over the next decade in the economic as well as the military field. But for our problems, as President Reagan said in his recent address at Notre Dame, here's the quote, "When it is written, the history of our time won't dwell long on the hardships of the recent past. But history will ask, and our answer will determine, the fate of freedom for 1,000 years. Did a nation born of hope lose hope? Did a people forged by courage find courage wanting? Did a generation steeled by hard war and a harsh peace forsake honor at the moment of a great climatic struggle for the human spirit?" The president asked those questions, but I know that he has confidence in what the answer will be and what it must be. And as I see in just the short time I've been here, see and feel the spirit of the class of 1981 and of the tradition of this great United States Naval Academy, I share that confidence. So long as there is an Annapolis, there will be a great United States of America. I congratulate each and every one of you on your superb performance, and I wish you Godspeed, fair seas, good sailing. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.